Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we're joined today by Zach Harris.
Hey guys.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
How's your day been?
It has been good. Busy, but good.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for fitting us in.
Oh, absolutely. That is my pleasure.
Yeah. I had a dentist appointment today.
Yeah.
Shout out David Washtwicks.
Oh, I have not looked at your teeth yet. Yeah. They look really good. Yeah. Yeah, you're killing it.
Had a cleaning.
They're shining all the way across the room. Right? Yeah.
Well, I was actually missing a tooth for a year.
Did
you know that? I don't know if you knew that or not.
No.
Yeah. I busted my face open at a camp when I was a kid. And lost a tooth, and then I went to
lost two teeth.
Well, I lost one, and then the other one was just kind of like damaged, basically. And so, but then it was fixed, and then it wasn't. They were like, okay, when it first happened, they were able to put the tooth back in, and it actually held, because I guess they put it on milk right away. Wow. I don't know if
that's a thing.
That's apparently a thing. Like, oh no, get it in milk, stat. Like, missing tooth, we need milk right away. Anyway, so tangential, but like basically they fixed the tooth, and then I went to a dentist a couple years later, and they were like, you can't keep this tooth in. So they were like, we're gonna have to take it out. Then they had to put a rod in, and the rod had to stay for like a year. So there was like a year, I think almost a year and a half period, where this tooth right here, it's 8 for any dentists at home. The like one next to the two middle teeth. I'm trying to think of the best to describe. Not the incisor.
Yeah.
But the one next to it, basically. Yeah. In between the two middle and the...
Yeah.
Was missing. Anyway.
And when I met Daniel, he was missing a tooth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, David Washtwicks, the reason why I'm going through all of this, I'm pretty sure that's how he pronounces his last name.
He'll tell us if we're wrong.
Yeah.
Neither of us have primary care physicians, but we do have a dentist.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So anyway, segue, graphic design. How is it? No. There's a lot of things that we want to talk with you about. We'd kind of done a little bit of a primer interview session here before we got to recording. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how, our listenership, if that's a word, is mostly people that come from opera, classical music, some acting. And so it's interesting for us, and I think hopefully interesting for them, that to kind of learn about other stuff.
Sure.
So I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to get into some of your specific work.
Yeah.
Because I think you have a very interesting
point of view.
Yeah.
And a distinct aesthetic.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to, because you are definitely like your biggest fan. Like you have all
I'm a total fan. Like whenever someone is like, oh, we need a logo, I'm like, you should get a hold of Zach Harris because he kills it. Like, so anyway.
Heck yeah. That's awesome.
I
appreciate it.
Yeah. Anytime. There are a couple things that I want to talk to you about, but let's go with the piece of your work that Chicagoans will probably know the best, and that is the Five Rabbits Chingatupelo can.
Yes.
You drew that.
Correct.
How did that happen?
Oh, man. a wonderful... rabbit trail of coincidences that
That's been the show.
I'm sorry, Maureen, did you forget how awful my puns were? Buckle up. My wife and I, Elspeth and I, used to run a craft beer blog for a time. It was called The Layman's Guide to Beer. About a year after doing that, Elspeth realized that she had some sort of gluten intolerance that made her feel awful after having anything with wheat in it, and thus could no longer drink beer. And the website limped on for a little bit with myself and another friend writing for it. But whatever the case, I saw that Five Rabbit was doing this Chingatupelo thing, which Chingatupelo translates to fuck your hair. The reasoning behind it being they had been brewing a house beer for a bar at the Chicago Trump Tower. And this was way back when, it was like right around when Trump was announcing his candidacy. And I don't even remember the date as such, but, and when he made those initial awful comments about,
like, when there were still Mexican 20 immigrants. Candidates.
Yeah, when he said the specific thing about how Mexican immigrants were rapists and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Five Rabbit, who is...
It's amazing how far we've come.
I mean, yeah, that feels like a completely different world.
Yeah.
But
it has
all led to this point. The Five Rabbit is amazing and is just steeped in Latin culture. The founder, Andres, is amazing, and they are super passionate about that background, that heritage, celebrating that culture through the beer they make. So when Trump made those comments, they cut out of the contract and were left with a ton of beer with nowhere to go. And for a smaller craft brewery, that's like... That's awful for having produced all of this product and not have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
So they ended up getting in touch with the bars, the distributors and stuff they know in the city to distribute it just in keg form to people that would take it and do all the proceeds for a specific Latino American organization as a kind of a... literal FU. The name then came out of that as a middle finger to that.
Cool.
I heard about that. Did a quick little doodle of that, like, kind of Trump head outline with the words Cinque Tupelo in it. Posted it on Twitter and tagged Five Rabbit in it. 5 minutes or so later, Andres direct messaged me on Twitter, and he's like, "Oh man, we need to make a t-shirt out of this." I'm like, "Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm leaving for vacation in 3 days, but yes,
yeah,
let's do that." And so, literally, like the week after that, I was in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, in the middle of nowhere.
Amazing?
Oh, it was gorgeous.
I've never been. I've really wanted to go.
Oh, we need to go.
We were, to add to obscurity here, we were staying at the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum, where they have a restored life, what's the word for a Coast Guard, like, quarters that was then acting as, like, a B&B.
Yeah.
Cool. It, really, really epic.
Very
middle
cool.
of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I'm on their Wi-Fi, which was pretty good, sending him a final revision of this design for this t-shirt of Trump's head with Cinque Tupelo in it. And that was the starting point.
Yeah.
And then they subsequently asked me to do stuff for a limited edition, like a bottle release they did, and then eventually the can, the posters, and otherwise. And I'm still doing some work with them.
Cool.
Working on the next step from there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'd love to actually hit on something that we talked about before we started recording, too, which is I love this thing that, and maybe this is you, or maybe this is a testament to the graphic design community, of just being like, I'm going to put this out there.
Mm.
And I think there's an element of that in, for musicians too, but I think that that is really cool. And I think what's great about graphic design is that it's an immediate, like, you look at something and you go, that I see, like, the vision, the voice, the perspective.
Mm.
I think that's really cool that that's something that can be read as immediately as, like, a Twitter post to a brewery, you know?
Sure.
I'd love to actually talk a little bit more about... So would you mind talking about the group you were talking about? The social media platform you were talking about?
Oh, before we started recording.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dribble.
Yeah.
With several B's in the middle of that. I forget the exact number. It autofills, so I forget how it's actually spelled.
Yeah.
It's just a little... place for graphic designers, illustrators, UI designers, web developers to post in process stuff and, like, small images from projects that then people can give feedback on. Some people use it specifically to get like feedback from a whole host of random colleagues, basically, mm-hmm. about different directions to go with projects, or just as a showcase sort of thing. Because of that, you can kind of see where certain design trends are going, at least for certain applications. A lot of that kind of mobile design style that you see in commonality, it allows designers to kind of build off of one another,
sure.
And inspire one another in different directions. So you can follow people on it, just like Twitter, that sort of thing.
It's also interesting to me the angle of the like, here's something I'm working on.
Mm.
And I that's being redundant maybe a little, but like, I don't know. Do you think that's something unique to the graphic design community?
There's definitely a little bit more of an ease of showcasing it.
Sure, yeah.
I think. If you're working on like a logo design, the image in and of itself can just exist in complete isolation from any other context. If you're writing a song, that takes a little bit more buy-in for someone to like jump in and say what they think about it.
Yeah. Right? Or even like, I'm flashing back to the idea of a poet sitting around mm-hmm. a campfire being like, well, I'm going to pull out my poetry now. And like, and then all of a sudden the people that are there are in for like a 20 to 30 minute, just like, they're held captive, you know? Yeah. And I think that's really interesting. And I'm not entirely sure where I'm going here, but
that kind of collaborative sort of getting feedback, like direct feedback immediately after putting pen to paper is something that, especially for certain projects, I find invaluable.
Yeah.
A lot of the most difficult clients that I have are the ones that don't give me enough feedback.
Yeah.
Because they're still thinking and feeling things, but they don't really know how to effectively communicate that mm-hmm. or otherwise. So it'll take a lot more work on my end to try to help them think that through or communicate that through, talk that through.
Right.
So I can actually design what they're actually wanting. For, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because a first stab of yours at something may not be the exact, like, thing that they're looking for. Like, exactly. It could be a statement of what you're trying to do, but not, like, who knows what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And if the only feedback is like, oh, yeah, I like that, but it could be, you know, a little more smooth. And I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean in this context? This is a drawing of a bird. What aspect is smooth here that you're looking for? So, that's a ridiculous, absurd
No, but I imagine that, like, you know, I know coming as someone who, like, in a world where I'm asking someone to draw me something, I know that I would feel self-conscious about being like, actually, this thing that you worked really hard on, I'm going to give exact, uneducated critique on
sure.
it.
Yeah,
and so
sure.
to me, the idea of doing that is a nightmare. And but like, to you, it's extremely helpful
mm-hmm.
of like, you know, I think the beak is a weird, like, in the bird, like,
sure.
I think the beak is a weird shape. I think that it's distracting to me, you know, stuff like that.
Absolutely.
To me I would be like, God, I feel like such an asshole right now. But no.
Well, so here's something that's interesting to me about graphic design
mm-hmm.
is, in a lot of cases, and I'm sure that there are exceptions, but in a lot of cases, you're working with people that may see the world more in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to use overused metaphor of like
sure.
color and creativity. But I think there's something to be said about, you know, when someone says, this is not what we're looking for mm-hmm. it can feel like they're saying it's bad or good.
Right.
Where it's like a polar extremes thing, where in reality, it's just a matter of taste. And mm-hmm. that has nothing really to do with you as an artist mm-hmm. so much as what is needed. I think that's an interesting... I don't think there's as much of that.
Well, yes and no. Sure. I mean, we'll go in for an audition, and like every singer has a conductor in their head where they're like, where you're like, that conductor just doesn't like my voice. Mm-hmm. Like I could go in there with the best audition of my life and he would like sleep through it. Like I think that there's some amount of that of just like, sometimes people don't like your voice, but yeah. I have a feeling it's more common in your field.
There's, especially when you're working with a specific aesthetic, as far, I mean, like to carry on the correlation with voice quality or otherwise, there's like the technical aspects of these arts that can be, I don't know, refined or changed or otherwise, but then there are other less or more esoteric sort of qualities that can't be changed in that same sort of way or otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, in terms of graphic design, it's like, you can look at a picture, like if you submit something for, you know, like if you submit something for approval, you know, and you, bird, and you, and it's like, you get it. It's like, this is obviously a bird, but this is not the type of bird I was looking for. This is not the representation of a bird that I was thinking of. Like I was thinking.
More smooth.
Yeah, more smooth. I want that bird a little smoother. Yeah.
Smooth bird.
Smooth bird. So I want to, I want to ask you then about some of your post-election stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we were talking a little bit before about our previous guest, and
who Lee was Wichman.
Lee Wichman before.
Cacta.
Yes.
If you haven't, go ahead and listen to that. That was a pretty good episode.
Yeah, it was a good episode. We were talking about, one of the things that he said was that in the therapy community, the week after the election, it was a lot like that they were having flashbacks to treating their patients right after 9/11. And I always find it interesting to talk to people about where their heads were at the week after Donald Trump was elected. And something that, and I follow you on Instagram and like we've been friends forever. Your social media presence stood out to me because instead of expressing fear, you were positivity from day one, which was helpful to me in like this sea of fear and negativity and anger and confusion. It was these positive messages. And
but I also feel like, because I think I saw a couple of them, and there was a difference between positivity of like, because there's a like, you got to respect the office kind of positivity,
right?
Versus
right.
like, shit's terrible, let's get through this together kind of positivity.
Yeah.
And I think that to talk about what we were talking about earlier, which is like the immediacy of the art form, I can see a couple posts that you did from you showing them to me in the car or something,
yeah.
and go, oh, I get entirely where he is at with that, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe not entirely, but you know what I'm saying.
Like, yeah. I think a lot of that is the form. Like what you were saying earlier about the immediacy of the design and that sort of thing, of being able to get that feedback right away. Or otherwise, it's like, I'm so much of what I am trying to do is take complex ideas and make them form.
Right.
Yeah.
Immediately readable, or a feeling that comes across with just a simple image or a simple set of words, or changing the kind of typography in and of itself to communicate a different idea than one way or another. And so, yeah, post-election, that was that therapy response for me, was responding with art.
Yeah.
Responding with creative energy, I guess, that was trying to be true to the moment and still mourn, like to not be like, okay, what's next, what are we gonna do about this, still being honest to the emotional like depth of the mourning that needed to happen. It still needs to happen in some ways, but also looking towards, yeah, that like wanting to promote self-care, wanting to promote working together in this, that this is not the end, so to speak.
I have a question that doesn't have to do with post-election stuff, and we can come back to post-election stuff, but something you said made me think of it. How much does formatting for, like, website use, or basically my thinking here is things that I would imagine are extremely prohibitive to, like, your creative expression, how much does that end up filtering your creativity, if that makes sense? Where maybe, let's say, like, it's Saturday at 4 p.m., right? Like, a time that would be a time that you wouldn't normally be, like, working on something. Mm-hmm. You go, like, something just comes into your head, and you're like, oh, I want to draw this. A moment like that, how much does the thought of, like, well, is this going to fit in the top left corner of a website? Mm-hmm. How much does that kind of a thing happen?
I guess not really that often for that kind of spur of the moment thing.
Yeah.
That's it. I feel like anybody in any creative field needs to be open to those sparks of inspiration, those, like, epiphanies, so to speak. Mm-hmm. While at the same time, that not being the sole basis for that creative career.
Yeah.
Where you need to be, you need to make yourself accessible to that creativity.
Yeah.
While also making it work for you at other times. I don't know how well that answers that
question. No, it's not really an... I know you're... Because it's not an easy question to ask either, because it's kind of like talking about riding this balance between, like... Okay, so, like, if we bring it back to the election thing, it's riding this balance between what you want to express personally and what the situation calls for. And sometimes what the situation calls for can literally mean, like, socially, like, in what bubble is this art being experienced?
Sure.
Or the situation could be calling for, well, this major company needs a design for a logo for their new program or something. And I think that that's something that I wouldn't have thought about had I not been in conversation now with you for like 20 or 30 minutes. Do you know what I mean? Like, as I'm trying to better understand, like, that perspective, like, that has to be, it seems like it's such a fine hand. And I'm sure that that's not what it's like as you're doing it. And I'm not entirely sure the question I'm coming to here. Again, I'm sorry that I keep doing that, okay. So I guess my question is, what do you think about that? I mean, like I know that's such an... I'm giving an open-ended question, because I'd love to just kind of hear how you experience that.
That kind of distinction between, like, the work that I just would do in and of myself without a prompt or without a commission or whatever, that versus the, like, the commissioned work sort of
thing.
Well,
so let's go a different route and maybe circle back to this. Yeah. So we were also really interested in talking to you about the fact that you pretty much make your living off of this, of freestyle, freelance.
Freestance.
You're a rapper also. Yes. Yeah.
No. We're also here to promote his
upcoming EP.
His single is dropping.
Yeah.
I cannot overstate the amount to which I am not a rapper.
Fair.
Well, so a lot of that probably freelance work maybe looks like the Chingo Tupelo work did, where, you know, fortunate and reaching out. But how much, let's put it like this, how many projects would you say you end up working on, like, weekly, monthly?
I mean, that really varies a ton.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, right now I have a lot of lot of pots on the stove, so to speak, that are all simmering at different levels. But there are some months where it's just a couple projects that mm-hmm. are going through. That's the stormy sea that is freelancing, where
yeah.
there isn't a sure thing, so to speak. And then everything will hit at once, and you have 8 deadlines in the span of 5 days that you have to meet. Or at least I do, because that's, you know,
yeah.
planning. Woo! Right. That is, you know.
Well, it's hard to plan when something like needing a logo is so not planned, you know?
Yeah.
Where you go like, oh, I need to expand into a different website and I need like the right style for it. And I should talk to a graphic designer about this. And that's something that maybe some thought, like some guy is thinking about, or woman is thinking about, like,
or lady,
like over dinner with friends or something, you
sure,
know. So
sure,
trying to make sense out of that and go like, well, I really should plan better. Like, how? That's even just so. Let's talk about that. Even navigating not feeling guilty about that is interesting to me. Where like I know for my work, for my art, there's a similar thing that happens where I'll have 3 or 4 singing projects, recording projects, whatever. And they'll usually be over the course of 2 months. And so those 2 months are just shit. And then there'll be like, I've spent the last 6 months or so not really doing much performing. And it's hard to look at that and go, like, is there something wrong with me that I haven't been performing? Is there something wrong with me that I can't handle it when there's too much performing? And I can only imagine then, as a freelancer, that's heightened. Is that something that you've, like, think about? Like, it's probably a better way to ask this.
No, so, that's, no, that's a good starting point. Because it's like, it's really easy to put all of your value in how well you are perceiving your creative output.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Like that is such an easy trap. I would call it a trap because there's so much in this world outside of myself that my pen upon it is not the end all be all, and it should not be the basis for my sense of value, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like that. It'll still get you, you know,
yeah.
like, especially in those drier times, you're thinking, well, am I not, should I be seeking something out differently? Or like, should I not have quoted that person at that, that amount? And so they aren't getting back to me, or, mm-hmm. okay, well, maybe that's okay. Cause that's what that project was worth. That's what it needed to be worth. And maybe they aren't able to do that. So it's okay if that I don't work on that. That's going to be better for me in the long run. It's art as a business, like as an applied art, mm-hmm. is so very different than the freewheeling inspirational art sort of thing, where you approach a blank page and just put whatever you want on it.
But so it's almost two different.
It is. Yeah. I mean, that's, man, I go by Birds and Kings.
Yeah.
On like all my social media handles. That's my website. And that, I have no idea the original origin of that pairing. It was sometime in high school in a notebook that I can no longer find, in probably some stupid sort of thing, maybe coming from this idea. But the main, what it has formed into is that duality of identity for creativity, where you have the birds representing that kind of esoteric, free-spirited creativity, going wherever the wind takes you sort of
right.
thing.
Yeah.
And the kings being the more authoritative, like centered, organized
mm-hmm.
System of design and working and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's every project, I'm trying to balance those two,
mm-hmm.
because the client needs the logo,
right?
Whether you're having good ideas for it or not, or whether you're having ideas that you are perceiving as good, or if you're feeling on your best game, or having some amazing idea, if that's not coming, you still need to do the logo.
Yeah.
It's like that still needs to happen. So not everything can be that, like, earth-shattering, just sit up in bed and jump out to write something down sort of moment, you know?
Yeah. You don't get 8 of those a week.
No, that's just... and if you're expecting that, you're just going to be disappointed.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be happy. You're going to drive yourself crazy for the sake of your art, which is certainly romanticized state of being, but...
When you're in it, it's not great.
No.
Yeah.
No. Doesn't seem ideal.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's something that we're kind of dealing with at the moment.
Well, like... perfect example, if we want to take this to the super meta. Let's say you're hosting a podcast and you want to talk to the person about, like, waxing poetic and the concept of creativity. But you realize, as a format of a podcast, that you have to have an overarching arc of an interview and have, like, a point. And, like, but instead, you just want to be like, so what do you think about this thing that I don't completely understand?
Like... Like when you're having a conversation with an audience in mind, it's tough, and it hampers, like when I had Allie Grauer on, I've been friends with her since I was 13, and I haven't seen her since November of 2015. And so I wanted to just sit and shoot the shit with her, but there was a microphone in front of me, and I think that reminiscing about all of our times in Irish West Choir would have not gone over well, because they would have been like, who's Val? Like, why are you talking about Val so much? But but at the end of the day, like, you know, I ended up learning about her process. And so, like, it is fulfilling, like, that extra work and that structure that you impose, you do get to a new level of perception of, like, you get to know intimately, you know, the point of view of whatever client you're working for. In this case, I get to talk to you about something other than beer.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask a question and bring it back to the post-election art, something I've been thinking about personally, and I'm in no way asking this question expecting you to answer all of my deepest fears or anything. But
Zach, can you help us?
Well, I think there's a definite temptation for people that are creatives to take this time in, like, post-election world and say, like, this is going to be great for art. And I think there's an interesting balance between that and, like, yeah, it's going to be great for art, but, like, some people are going to have a terrible time. Like, already there's just horrible things happening. People being deported and people being,
have rights and protections absolved, taken away.
Like, all the stuff that's kind of going on this week with transgender people. So I guess my question that I do not in any way need you to assuage all of my fears is what do you think about that? What is our responsibility as artists?
As artists.
yeah, that's... I think of it as everyone has a duty to respond to the nature of the world, and some people will... You'll respond in the way that you're best at, I guess. And so people in the arts definitely have a responsibility to respond and create based on the needs and the issues at hand. It's interesting, because it's like that's part of the same thought, even in that those post-election posts that I put out there. I was like, man, I am feeling driven because of this. Because I have a specific thing to rail against. I have a specific thing to oppose. And so that idea of art flourishing under adversity or in that kind of environment is an interesting one that seems to have some precedence. But it, yeah, I wonder about the, like, the overall value of that response too.
Sometimes. Well, it's interesting because, like, it's kind of the game of, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Mm-hmm. But if the but the thing that's not killing me is not as difficult as the thing that's not killing the person who's got to move back to Mexico.
Oh yeah.
You know? And so that's kind of like a, it's very nuanced because it's, you know,
it is.
Yeah. Like, it's definitely making me better as a person, but that's not what it's about. Maybe, or maybe it is and it isn't.
I mean, it's like, really, Maureen, you mentioned before how you found the art so positive.
Yeah.
And that's what you needed just from, like, a, I don't know, like a psychological
right.
standpoint. You needed that, positive feedback isn't the right word, but that kind of, like, drive forward yeah, amid all of it.
I think I've described it as, like, a beacon of, like, mm-hmm. it was, like, amidst just kind of, like, this sea of fear and anger and confusion, it was this bright spot of, like, we can do this, like, yeah. one step at a time, and it was a message that I wasn't hearing.
That speaks to, like, I'm thinking of the other beacons that I had in that initial post-election that continue going on, and also thinking back to I was younger at the time, but hearing from other people about living through the Bush years too. Of having, I mean, yeah, you saw how there were certain forms of art or media that absolutely flourished within that context by, like, the Daily Show's rise to prominence because there was something to oppose and to make fun of and that sort of thing. And it's really, really easy to do that with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost too easy because that almost just plays into the megamaniacal, like, identity that got him into the White House in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting for me thinking about, like, look at SNL right now,
mm-hmm.
where, like, some of the best sketches they're doing are political and bent, but then and maybe this is my personal opinion, other people don't necessarily agree with this, but I think SNL besides that is some of the worst SNL. It gets really bad. And you watch a couple sketches and you're like, that wasn't funny. Like, that also was not funny.
Yeah.
We watched, I think Octavia Spencer was just on, and she's fantastic, mm-hmm. and they did weird things.
Well, they lean on Kenan way too much. He's not funny. And I think when we were kids and we're watching Kenan and Kel, we knew Kenan wasn't the funny one. It was Kel. I don't know. But so I guess my point there is just this idea of, you know, I agree with you. Well, okay, so the other end I wanted to go with this is, have you noticed the, like, Bush resurgence right now? Of, like, him as a popular figure? Like, he was on Jimmy Kimmel talking about his paintings.
Just kind of like the sense of, like, oh, you thought I was bad. Now I'm not the worst.
Yeah. Well, and people being like, I miss him.
Yeah. Which, like, true, but also, like, Bush was a war criminal. Like, like, yes, but he also, like, got us into four wars that we didn't necessarily need to get into.
Yeah.
And
I think that there's a double-edged sword with political art in that, first of all, it's easy for political art to be popular.
Hmm.
It's an easy stance to have, because basically any art that you make that's anti-hate right now is gonna strike a chord.
Yeah.
I think it's easy, though, to lump things that we still need to be paying attention to into the things that we're leaning on. Mm. Like, the fact that we're romanticizing the Bush years because Trump is so bad. Like, yes, mm. the Trump years, or sorry, the Bush years were not as bad as now.
But they weren't good.
But they weren't good.
Yeah, not even close.
They were not good. And I feel like we just need to be more vigilant. And less like comfort foodie.
Well, it's also nuance.
Absolutely. I was gonna say, because it's like it's really easy to make the easy joke.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it is so simple to do that simple thing, to make the joke that is practically made for you, so to speak, to make the statement that is almost a given. But it's a lot harder to find the thing that needle in at the thing that is truly a progressive idea, truly a thing that's going to do more than just like, ha, yes, I agree with that. Ha ha. And then go on with your day.
And like forget about it because there are 12 other of those.
Exactly.
Well, so I think I've got a simplification of the question I was trying to ask earlier. The one of the three complicated questions I was trying to ask earlier. So we're talking about this idea of nuance versus simplicity. And I think that one of the things that I was thinking about originally is, I think that most logos, most graphic designs, or at least my base understanding of what like a company would need for a logo, is probably pretty simple.
Or at least clear?
Yeah, definitely. I would hesitate from saying simple, even in the most straightforward or like non-complex design. Like what? What's the least complex logo that you can think of, top of your head?
Target.
Yeah,
absolutely. So Target's interesting just because theirs hasn't changed much either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the simplicity of it is what is so fascinating about the design, because it is utterly iconic. Mm-hmm. There is no excessive elements there. It is two circles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. But it is instantly recognizable because of how they use it.
Right.
And how they build off of it. Save as true for any of those big recognizable brands, but you can bet they have spent thousands of hours thinking about how it is used.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just taking an image and slapping it on a business card or slapping it on a website, that's not going to give you like the most that image could do. It takes like thinking about that context and how it is applied and how it is received and thought about. And
No, I think you're entirely hitting on my thinking here, which is just this idea of how do you communicate something that is in nature, I think, nuanced. Even if you're talking about, let's go back to the Target icon, where like I would imagine that design would need to communicate, or at least they would hope that it would further their kind of market, which is like more expensive than Walmart, but like you're gonna find what you're looking for, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that is that idea of like a Target.
Like I found it.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
and I think that seems to me like taking something that's nuanced and making it, and I agree with you in that the word isn't necessarily simple, but
applicable.
Sure.
Or accessible, even.
Yes, accessible.
And that's interesting in the context of the political art and such that we're talking about, because so much of the conversation outside of us sitting in a podcast talking about nuance is utterly unnuanced. And it is people that don't want to think about the nuance.
Mm-hmm.
It is people who want the really simple way of thinking about the world.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to a podcast this morning and they actually likened it to they were specifically talking about any debate between Democrats and Republicans right now, especially in Congress. And they were talking about how it's like the Democrats are playing checkers and the Republicans are like throwing rocks through the window. And I think that's so interesting, where it's like you're trying to communicate nuance, but like why? Like, why are you doing that? That's not, I don't know.
Yeah, that's, I've heard a lot of people talking about the issues of how the campaigns were run to that level. And that's a huge aspect of Trump's popularity, because the nuance of the things that he says or believes are utterly irrelevant, honestly. Yeah. Like, that to the people who support him, I should say.
Like how the wall is going to be built.
Absolutely. That doesn't matter. Yeah. It is utterly emotional. It is utterly based in a singular sort of response and a singular straightforward worldview that doesn't have room for those complexities and would rather not approach them or think about them.
Would you say that's a design error? Is that even maybe the right word for it? But like,
maybe a human design error. I don't know. That's like,
that's interesting to me. I would almost like want to say that that's like a, I'm thinking of the like a logical fallacy, like where if your message, if you're trying to, if you communicate something simply, but it really like does not encompass the entirety of what you're saying, like that's almost like a,
it makes it no longer true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a logical fallacy that's like, it has to do with omission. Or like lying by omission, pretty much.
Yeah.
No, I know.
I guess it is so challenging coming from a point of actually enjoying thinking about this, of the reality that half of this country does not want to think about this. Half of people do not want to consider the nuanced reality of existence.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a challenging thing to get to, because it's like, okay, what am I supposed to do with that knowledge? How do we work within that? How do we work to change that when there is a fear of higher education, a fear of perceived elitism, of intellectualism being a negative in the eyes of a large group of people? How does that change? Right. I don't know.
I mean, and how do you how do you tell a group of people who are fearing irrelevancy that, like, hey, don't worry, these people who went to Harvard actually do have your backs, when like the people who voted for Trump are like, they're looking at him and they're saying, hey, he's just as afraid of people coming in and taking our jobs as we are. Like, that's something that we can identify with. That is something that I experience every day. Whereas, like, when a left, where I feel like the left came at it from a point of, like, we need to be open to this idea and, like, look at how many benefits that there have been. Whereas the people who don't want that, don't want that.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how, you know, how do we bridge that gap of, you know, how do we communicate to that scared population simply that, like, it's not a bad thing. And I think that that's the issue that the left has been having, is that, like, it's a communication issue.
Yeah.
Of, like, trying to, of, like, making it more complex than these people feel it is.
And in a lot of ways, I think for someone that maybe is looking at it at a glance, it's really easy to kind of perceive the entire, like, both parties as the same camp, really, when you do have a lot of Democrats that take money from lobbyists and stuff. And you know, I'm not going to get entirely like Bernie Sanders on it, but, like, you know, it's, there's something to be said about the left not really looking out for the fears of the, like, lower income population.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that there's definitely something to that. There's
Like, the Democratic Party used to be the party of the people. And it, in a way, like, it's not always acting that way. And I mean, like, that's kind of a tricky thing right now.
Cory Booker approved Betsy DeVos.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, people love Cory. People love Cory Booker, but he approved Betsy DeVos.
He's big with Big Pharma, but, you know. Anyway, we've still got a few minutes. I'm trying to think if there's any other big questions we wanted to like ask. I think this has been a great primer for like visual artists
to come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think it's good. Yeah, because so, and we were talking to you about this before we started recording, that you're our first visual artist, and we're trying really hard to expand our reach, and we're mm-hmm. trying to get as broad of spectrum of artists on here as possible. Yeah. And so I guess, you know, I'm gonna talk directly to our audience. If there is anyone out there who you think would be a good addition to this community, please give us a shout. We've loved having Zach on talking about like aesthetic. You know, you've heard, you've listened. If you're listening to me talking, you've just heard this conversation. But you know, like if you want to hear more conversations like this, then please reach out to us, because mm-hmm. that would be, we'd love it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, awesome. Let's do the. So at the end of every episode, what we do is we have our guest give like a minute plug of an upcoming project, maybe, mm-hmm. or something that they're really interested in, like something they really love.
Where we can find you.
That is not part of the minute, but also part of this period of time. Excellent. Meaning like you get a minute 15.
Yeah. Kinda
really. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, I guess like the main thing to look out for is some more stuff from Five Rabbit.
Okay.
Is going to be doing some really cool stuff that I can't actually talk about on the podcast yet.
Ooh. Cool.
So.
Well, when it releases, we'll have to have you back on.
Yeah. Keep an ear to the ground. Yeah. They've got good stuff going on. They're doing a very interesting thing in navigating that issue of like a nuanced response and how to advocate while being like efficient in mm-hmm. communication, but also not oversimplifying, and also being a brewery.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So
yeah.
They've been really fun to work with in talking with about that kind of stuff. That's been very fun and very, very cool to be a part of.
Cool. Is that so? And people can find you. You mentioned it at Birds and Kings on Instagram.
Yes.
Do you do Twitter? Do you do a Facebook page? Maybe or
yeah, I am Birds and Kings pretty much everywhere.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. Those are the main outlets. Tumblr. Gotta
roll Tumblr. There.
Yep. Absolutely.
Shout out Tumblr.
That's a great place. That's a lot of art inspiration stuff over there. That's mm-hmm. that's where I go to for that.
Also a lot of porn.
There is that.
Yeah, you know, just gotta let people know.
And where the two meet.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely.
Really beautiful place. All right, cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. My name is Daniel Johansson. Say
and
your
I'm,
name, I guess.
And
yeah.
I'm Maureen Smith.
I usually do that differently. Anyway.
Yeah.
So if you want to find more of what we're working on, you can head to scottbmag.com. That's where you can find different articles, old and new. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at scottbmag. You can find us on Facebook under Scottby Space Magazine.
Yeah, and as always, I just want to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a zero budget at the moment. We have two microphones. Daniel and I share, which is problematic for leveling. So we would love to upgrade our setup. So you can head to scottbmag.com, go to our About section. You can either become a subscriber or do a one-time donation. If you become a subscriber, we will give you a shout-out on the show. We will also, we're going to make an internal group, I think we talked about, or like take an internal group that we already have and like turn it into our internal group.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do a one-time donation, we will send you a handwritten...
Yeah, and if that's something that... people necessarily can't afford, but like would be interested in doing anyway, is like an internal
like
group.
We'd
be
open
to that too.
Yeah.
Like shoot us a message if that's something that you're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, like I said, if you're a subscriber, we'll give you a shout out. If you do a one-time donation, we'll send you a handwritten thank you note, in the mail. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool, thanks for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.